Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1997. The Meaning of Affirmative Action.
Hello. It has been interesting watching the television commentators and other minions of political correctness wring their hands and moan about the falling enrollment of blacks in some of America's universities and professional schools recently. Black undergraduate enrollment has fallen by one half in some branches of the University of California. The number of blacks in the law schools of the University of California and the University of Texas has fallen even more drastically. Until recently, these schools had been very proud of themselves for having a higher percentage of blacks among their students than in the general population. And now they have lost all, or nearly all, of their blacks. The media spokesmen and the Clintonistas are wailing about the loss of diversity. And they all know who is to blame for this dreadful turn of events. It is those hateful people who have forced the scuttling of affirmative action programs in some areas. It is white racism which is keeping blacks out of the schools. The truth of the matter, of course, is that it was affirmative action programs which were keeping blacks in the schools. And when those programs were ended, the black enrollment plummeted. What the diversity mongers really are alarmed about is that what has happened where affirmative action programs have been dropped exposes their lie of racial equality. What we see in California and Texas now is that when the prop of affirmative action is taken away, the artificial equality it had been supporting collapses. This is something the media bosses and the Clintonistas really don't want us to see, because it exposes the artificiality and the lack of viability of the multiracial society they have been trying to ram down our throats for so long. We were told many years ago, when affirmative action programs were first imposed on us, that they were necessary to compensate for white racism, that blacks were being kept out of universities and professional schools by racist officials, that blacks were being denied employment and promotions and other opportunities by racist employers and so on, and that we needed to end the so-called racial discrimination and extend a helping hand to blacks so that they would have an equal opportunity to become lawyers, doctors, business executives, and so on. The tacit assumption was that blacks are equal in ability to whites, and that if they were given an equal chance, they would succeed equally. We were told that affirmative action programs would provide this equal opportunity. Of course, equal opportunity was never the intention of the media bosses and the other promoters of affirmative action. Their aim was to give blacks more opportunity than whites. Their aim was to ensure that blacks would succeed equally, regardless of what had to be done, regardless of how much extra opportunity had to be given to them in order to achieve this. Really, there was very little, if any, white racism holding down black enrollment in American universities, even before the government began enforcing affirmative action programs. University officials already were very liberal and were happy to have more blacks. They didn't get many blacks because, in the first place, not many blacks applied. And in the second place, most of those who did apply could not compete effectively with the white students. There is a very substantial average difference in IQ, in problem-solving ability, in intelligence between whites and blacks. And it shows up very significantly on examinations and in success rates. Affirmative action programs require school officials and employers to ignore these differences in ability between whites and blacks, and to recruit blacks at all costs. Affirmative action requires school officials to boost blacks ahead of whites, to give them economic incentives not available to whites, to give blacks preferential treatment in order to get them into school and keep them in school. Affirmative action requires employers to behave similarly by offering blacks more than they offer whites, and by hiring and promoting blacks who are less qualified than whites. The government requires schools to graduate a certain percentage of blacks, and it doesn't care how they achieve this result. The government requires employers to have certain percentages of black employees and black executives, regardless of how many whites have to be trampled on in order to achieve this. And so, for many years, school administrators and business executives have been practically pulling blacks out of trees and graduating them or putting them in the boardroom in order to keep the government happy. There's been a great deal of deceit involved in these affirmative action programs from the beginning. The government and the media tell us that they don't involve quotas or racial preferences when they clearly do. The government and the media tell us that affirmative action does not hurt whites at all. It merely helps blacks. It gives blacks a little boost without taking anything away from whites. That, of course, is simply a lie, although many whites have been willing to swallow it rather than seem to be racist. The media have deliberately insinuated that any white person opposed to affirmative action is a racist. Now, a few people in California and Texas have rebelled and have managed to get themselves out from under the yoke of affirmative action. In fact, a few blacks have rebelled too because they are unhappy about the resentment against them which is being caused by affirmative action. And the media and the government are screaming about how this very small rebellion is destroying diversity, about how this is taking us back to the bad old days of segregation, and so on. The thing for us to understand is that affirmative action is only one part of a much larger scheme which has been imposed on us. As I said before, the aim of the media bosses and their hangers-on in the government is a multiracial society, a society in which black teachers and black professors teach white students, a society in which black athletes become heroes and role models for young whites, a society in which black brain surgeons and black rocket scientists and black astronauts and black army generals and black political leaders are prominent, a society in which black drill instructors lord it over white recruits, a society in which blacks and whites mix intimately and intermarry with each other at every social level. Now, the media bosses have been very successful at creating the illusion that we have such a society. The news, entertainment, and advertising we see on television are all designed, very carefully and skillfully designed, to support this illusion. The TV world is an artificial world. On television, we see blacks behaving like whites, speaking like whites, and showing themselves equal or superior to whites in every way, including intelligence, creativity, industry, morality, civility, and sense of responsibility. The agencies on Madison Avenue, which design advertisements for television, carefully cultivate this illusion. Blacks are just like whites, except for being a little darker and perhaps a little smarter and a little more civilized and a little better dressed the advertising people want us to believe. Black families are just like white families, except for being a little warmer and more loving and taking a little better care of their yards. And the scriptwriters in New York and Hollywood who give us our entertainment are engaged in exactly the same sort of deception. If there's a white male southerner in a film, for example, the chances are about 9 out of 10 that he'll be either a despicable bigot or a credit to his race by standing up against the despicable white bigots all around him. And if there's a black in a major role in the film, the chances are very good that he'll be brighter, more resourceful, braver, and more moral than the whites around him. The first commandment of casting in Hollywood is, thou shalt not portray a person of color in a negative light. The same racial slant is given in the treatment of the news. Any white-on-black crime gets star billing and is repeated endlessly, while black-on-white crime, even of the most atrocious sort, is ignored if the media bosses think they can get away with it, and buried as soon as possible if they feel obliged to mention it. The shooting of a convicted black drug dealer and his girlfriend by a boozed-up white soldier at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, a little over a year ago, was hyped and kept in the headlines for months in order to create the impression that murderous white racists were taking a terrible toll among innocent blacks. I'm sure you've heard about it many times. But just 3 months after the Fort Bragg shooting, in March of last year, a non-white sergeant at Camp Pendleton, the big Marine base in Southern California, shot his white executive officer to death and tried to kill his white commanding officer while shouting anti-white gibberish. And hardly anyone outside the San Diego area heard of it because the media bosses decided it wouldn't be good for their racial program to report it. The unfortunate fact is that today the artificial world of television shapes most people's ideas and attitudes even more than the real world around them does. Nevertheless, the real world just won't go away, and so reality has a nasty way of contradicting the fantasy world of television and deflating the multiracial pipe dream constructed by Hollywood's scriptwriters and Washington's spin doctors. The way to make the real world conform to the fantasy is affirmative action. If real world blacks aren't quite up to the standard of the television world, then have the government give them a boost with a little affirmative action. Make sure that white university students see plenty of black students around them. Make sure that the black students get grades at least as good as those of the white students. And have the government require that there be an appropriate quota of blacks in caps and gowns at graduation, even if it means trashing all of the academic standards. And so now, a few rebels in California and Texas have forced the schools in their states to deal honestly with students for a change. And reality has reared its ugly head again, spoiling the carefully constructed illusion of racial equality. As soon as the prop of affirmative action was removed, the illusion simply collapsed. Black enrollment plummeted. And now there is a real danger that whites in California and Texas may realize that when blacks must compete on an equal basis with whites, they lose consistently, except in those areas of physical activity, basketball, boxing and ear biting, sprinting and jumping, to which they are especially suited by their anatomical peculiarities. This is the reason that the Clintonistas are so desperate to keep the affirmative action props in place everywhere. This is why Mr. Clinton was so upset about the dropping of affirmative action at the University of California, that he made a special trip to California a few weeks ago in an effort to keep the illusion propped up there. I'll recapitulate what I've said so far because it's quite important for us to understand what's happening and to keep it in mind. There are people who desperately want all of us to believe that everyone is born with equal ability, regardless of race, color, creed, sex, national origin, sexual orientation, etc., and that the only reason some people are less successful than others is because they aren't treated fairly. In other words, because of racism or sexism or homophobia or whatever. Some of the people who are desperate to have us believe this actually believe it themselves. They have watched so much television that they have fallen under its spell, and they feel guilty for being white. The only way they can escape their guilt is to strive for a world in which there is no inequality, and in which, therefore, no one can be guilty for being more successful or more intelligent or more civilized or more beautiful than anyone else. But the people who control television and who want us to believe in equality certainly do not believe in it themselves. They believe that they are a chosen people, ordained by their tribal god to rule over all the nations of the earth. Their strategy for ruling is to destroy the solidarity, the sense of identity and nationhood of all other nations by mixing them together and convincing them that they are all the same. They use their television and the other media they control to create the illusion of equality. They present us with an image of a world in which blacks are at least as capable as whites in all the arts of civilization, and also have at least as much foresight and self-discipline and morality as whites. In fact, they generally overdo it and present us with a fantasy world in which blacks are morally superior to whites, if not intellectually superior. But because what they present us with is a fantasy and is contradicted by reality, they use their influence over the politicians to promote governmental programs such as affirmative action, which obscure reality, which conceal it from white Americans. Since most blacks simply are not capable of succeeding in a white society, the equality mongers give them an artificial sort of success through affirmative action. And when the affirmative action is suddenly taken away, reality reasserts itself and the illusion of equality is shattered. The fakery is exposed. The phony world of successful, affluent, attractive, creative blacks collapses. That's what has happened at the University of California and at the University of Texas Law School. And that's why Mr. Clinton is running around the country giving speeches in favor of more affirmative action, while the Hollywood and Madison Avenue Jews crank out more fantasy. Now, the reason why all of this is so important, the reason why I'm so concerned about it, is not because affirmative action takes away from whites to give to blacks. And it does do that, regardless of the lies of its promoters to the contrary. But if that's all it did, I'd be in favor of it, because the resentment it generates among whites will be very useful in bringing about the restoration of our society someday. But, unfortunately, that's not all that affirmative action does. One of the other things it does is bring about a lowering of the average proficiency in the skills needed to sustain our civilization. The more that we force an artificial equalization of blacks and whites in our society, the closer we approach to the sort of skills and standards we can see in Tanzania or Zaire or Rwanda. Actually, I guess that Zaire is no longer called Zaire since the latest black dictator and Generalissimo for life took over there a few weeks ago. The advances in technology we have made in this century tend to obscure the effects of this lowering of standards, because a few very bright people now can carry the problem-solving load for a much larger number of people than in the past. But the effects of affirmative action are still visible and still increasing. They are especially noticeable in such things as growing bureaucratic inefficiency and corruption. In some areas of the United States, local government operates on the level of a banana republic. Washington, D.C., with its exceptionally high degree of affirmative action, is an outstanding example. Another effect of affirmative action, and in the long run it is the most catastrophic effect, is the social and economic equalizing of blacks and whites. In the past, the lower success rate of blacks tended to keep them socially and economically separated from whites, even without any legal barriers between the races. This social and economic separation resulted in a relatively low rate of miscegenation, of sexual mixing between the races. A few black athletes, O.J. Simpson, for example, became wealthy enough to acquire white wives, but the overall genetic mixing was relatively minor. By artificially boosting blacks economically and socially, however, affirmative action has greatly increased the rate of miscegenation. And believe me, it was planned that way by the equality mongers. This is why we must regard every advocate of affirmative action as an advocate of genocide against our people, and why we must one day hunt down these advocates and hold them accountable in full. Thanks for being with me again today.